Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and not that of WVRC Media, its staff and management, or the distributors of this podcast.
This is episode 6 of Scoop Squad Truth Squad, copyright 2022. Today we're going to be talking with Morgan Switzer from the prosecutor's office of Kanawha County. She's in for her mother, Ashley, who's on vacation. And also Jenny Reiser, our usual co-host that's here, and I'm Ron. I'm the executive producer, just kind of filling in and just trying to keeping the flow going, trying not to feed my ego. But anyway, we have some specific ideas that we want to run by you about drugs in Kanawha County and surrounding areas. We know it's not just a Charleston issue. It's really not just a Kanawha County issue. It's every town. There's a drug problem connected to the homelessness problem. If any of you have been on Pastor Collins' Facebook site, Collinsology, he gave some very good, frank discussions about pastoring a church that has been inundated with crime and homelessness, people defecating in the stairwells, people vandalizing, leaving trash. So we will get into that. So sit back, relax, eat some ice cream as we eat some ice cream. Compliments of Crafts of the Coal on Old Main Plaza in St. Albans. I think we had what, Jenny? We had
Oreo cheesecake.
So that was wonderful. And
It was so good.
We're sorry you missed it if you didn't get any, but you have a chance to get some next week. Have it in store. So when we come on at 6 on Thursdays with the release of the next podcast, you'll have it with you.
Well, you can go to Old Main Plaza and get that said ice cream, or they also have two mobile units.
Mm-hmm. One at the Mound in South Charleston, mm-hmm. and the one at the garage in Taze Valley, close to the City National Bank.
Okay. All right. So there you go. There's all kinds of locations, and then I'm going to pass it over to Morgan. Hello, Morgan.
Hi.
Morgan, why don't you give us your official title? What's your official title now?
Yeah, so I actually left the prosecutor's office. I am a former Kanawha County prosecuting attorney, and now I am at the West Virginia Department of Homeland Security as general counsel and as the communications director as well.
Well, and I've told you what's really neat for me, and I mentioned this to Ron earlier, is that my dad was the director of operations for Homeland Security and Emergency Management for 35 years. He spent most of his career working in emergency management. When he first started, it was a little, it's near like up Greenbrier Street near the little mini market. There's right. a building, it's an eye firm, eye doctor now, but that's where his office was back in the 70s. And then they moved down to the basement of the Capitol during his career.
Was his a name that people that followed the news would recognize? Did he get quoted often, or was he?
His name was Tom Burns, and he actually was the executive director during the Rockefeller administration.
I remember him. Yeah.
That's awesome.
I worked for public broadcasting at that time, and I think we probably interviewed him at some point.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing, and It was cool. You know, when I was little, I ran around the Capitol, and the fun thing to do was yell because it bounced off the...
Oh, yeah.
I still do that.
I used to like to go to those little domes on the side, not the major dome, but like close to the governor's office. There's this kind of like half a dome, if you know which one. And I would take my feet and stomp them, you know, and with hard shoes, it made a lot of echo, which, you know, is a cheap thrill.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't have to pay for that.
I still do it sometimes.
Well, if I'm there, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is fun.
It hurts with tennis shoes, but with hard shoes, ooh.
Right. That's where I'm located. That's where I get to work every day.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
I've been there many times.
Yeah, it's cool. And then the big boards that they have in the like the emergency room where everybody kind of huddles. I used to draw. That was like my entertainment. Was you know, it gave me a. I loved while drawing on the whiteboards.
What a cool memory!
Wow, and the fact they had whiteboards back then. We didn't have those when I was a kid. You know, we just had blackboards.
Well, it was really cool because every school had a blackboard, but my dad actually had life-size whiteboards. Wow. So that was like a really cool.
That was the new trend.
Yeah, and my uncle actually has Bill Jopling worked for emergency services for as long longer than my dad did. He worked there first, and then my dad came on board a little bit later.
That's awesome.
Yeah, wow. It's a cool memory. You know, if any disaster would happen, I'd give him a call when. During 9/11, you know, once I realized that a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center, the World Trade Center, I called him, was like, what's going on? And just super calm. Yeah, I think you probably should stay at home right now.
Yeah.
Little did I know that he knew that there was a plane flying over West Virginia.
Right.
When I called.
And, yeah, that's
just
incredible.
Cool as a cucumber. I can't imagine. What that must have felt like for him, because I'm sure his first thought was, this plane's going to fly right into a chemical plant and blow this whole place up.
That's
kind of what we thought. I worked at the newspaper at the time, and when we heard that, that was our first thought. I think that was the plane that ended up crashing at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, if I remember right. But, you know, while it's in the air, it could be crashing anywhere. In downtown Charleston,
scary.
Yeah, can you imagine my dad just talking to me and not being able to say a word to your kid? And that happened, you know. He also worked Three Mile Island. That was like one of my first memories was that he was on the news and they were interviewing him about Three Mile Island.
Wow.
And my mom was like, I just remember her being, what's he doing there? He was actually the first, a little bit more about my dad, the first radiological director for the state of West Virginia.
Oh, wow. What a neat guy.
Yeah, and he was studying to be a nuclear power plant investigator. He died of a cardiac issue, he was studying to be a nuclear reactor inspector when he died.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, now I know why you're cool.
You don't get in a sweat when the going gets tough.
Well, and that's something I wasn't really I was prepared for that part of my job, but the emergency response that, you know, we have to be prepared for can range from anything, and it's you're always just ready to go, and I think that's a very comforting thing for me, you know, to first of all, the people I work with now are incredible. Incredible. I've been lucky to have the most amazing, you know, coworkers at the prosecutor's office, and then now at Homeland Security, you know, it's just been such a blessing to have the people that I have. But I feel very secure where I'm at.
It's a neat
it's
place.
Really cool.
It's
it
like
is.
Little, you'll never know who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Just low key, making sure everything's safe.
Right. And there's just so much communication. And, you know, I'll take this opportunity to kind of recognize the horrible tragedy that happened in Nicholas County the other day. And, you know, speaking about emergencies that we're all at the Capitol apprised of and communicating about, you know, that was one of them, the deputy that was killed in the line of duty. That's something that just happened. It's a coincidence that it happened in the wake of Cassie Johnson's murder trial that's going on right now in Kanawha County. So, you know, I just want to give a shout out to all those officers and their families and friends and everybody who went to work today in law enforcement and tonight in law enforcement, knowing full well that they might not come home.
Absolutely.
You know, that's something that the Nicholas County deputy did not, I'm sure, expect that night, but he was ready to offer his life and he did. And, you know, I had the distinct honor of knowing Cassie Johnson for a very brief time, worked with her a couple times and, you know that she died with honor, and know the two prosecutors that are prosecuting her murder, and you know they are. You couldn't ask for a better team to give her and her family justice. So.
Would you say that the Cassie Johnson case is more closely related to drugs than just regular violence?
Oh, I don't think there's a doubt. I think it's been. And you know, it'll be proven during the course of this week, I think, what the relationship to drugs and illegal drug use was there. Mm-hmm. But that's why Cassie was responding. There was some suspicious activity in that area. And I think it's going to come out that, you know, that's probably what was going on.
Right. So it's certainly not gotten any better since then. Where do you think we are now? Do you think we're at the climax of this drug situation, or do you think it's going to get even worse?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't think so. In West Virginia and nationwide, drugs have been a problem ever since I can remember entering into law enforcement as a prosecutor. And now, you know, we're seeing fentanyl cases rise, fentanyl overdose deaths rise. Fentanyl coming into West Virginia is just astronomical. You know, and when you talk about fentanyl specifically, a lot of people don't really understand the lethality of fentanyl.
Mm-hmm.
But just to give you kind of an idea, right? So a lot of the drug trafficking organizations distribute fentanyl, sell fentanyl by the kilogram. 1 kilogram of fentanyl, the DEA estimates, that could kill approximately 500,000 people, okay?
Do you think this is coming in from the southern border, or do you think it's coming other
a lot
places?
Of them, a lot of the drugs are, but now just that 1 kilogram can kill 500,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Census Bureau just estimated West Virginia's population to be, what, 1.8 million?
1.8, close to it.
So my math, I don't know, but 4 kilograms could probably kill West Virginia's population plus a little more. So you're talking about that type of lethality, okay? So that's something that has to be considered. Then where is fentanyl manufactured? Well, fentanyl that's not in the hospitals, clearly, that type of drug is being manufactured in clandestine labs in Mexico and overseas. It's not being manufactured here in West Virginia. So any fentanyl that we find here is not being made here.
Mm.
So that's being brought here from other states, other countries, and that's a huge problem. But it's also, it gives us a way to attack it and a way to get in front of it. And I think that's, you know, I'll take this opportunity, too, to bring up Senate Bill 536, and that's also known as the fentanyl bill. And Governor Justice, you know, really pushed this bill, was a huge advocate for increasing penalties for fentanyl, and that's because of what I just said, right? Fentanyl is incredibly lethal, dangerous drug. It takes almost nothing to overdose and die from fentanyl. And so what we did was we wrote this bill in order to increase penalties for fentanyl distribution, the sale of fentanyl in West Virginia, and also bringing fentanyl into West Virginia. So now, instead of it being a crime penalized by I think it was 1 to 15, it's now 3 to 15. And if you bring fentanyl into the state of West Virginia, you are automatically sentenced to a determinate term of 10 to 20 years. So no less than 10.
Right.
So you can just assume that if you get caught bringing fentanyl here, you're going to prison for 10 years if you get sentenced to prison. And, you know, it's a way that we can ensure that people are at least people are considering what could happen if they do bring fentanyl in and expose our citizens to that type of lethal drug.
What do you think law enforcement and lawmakers could be doing locally to address the problem?
Well, I think that...
And is it tied to homelessness?
Oh, man, those are two loaded questions. I mean, I don't know that you could ask law enforcement or legislators to do more than they're doing. I can mm-hmm. tell you that I've seen both now. I've gotten the opportunity to see law enforcement react. I've gotten the opportunity to see the legislators react, and how, you know, the legislators were positive and reacted positively to the fentanyl bill on both sides. It was a bipartisan issue, I think,
mm-hmm.
that had bipartisan support. You know, I don't know that the question should be posed to those groups of people at this point. I think it could be, but also, I mean, we have to talk to everybody.
Right.
Because I think the drug problem is everybody's problem.
Right.
To solve. And the more people at the table, the better.
So is it should it be approached more from a treatment standpoint now? Do you think treatment is the way to reduce the demand for the drug? Is there something we could be doing to increase the availability of treatments?
You know, there's a lot. West Virginia is incredibly successful at providing treatment for people that want treatment mm-hmm. and people that need treatment. One of the things that the DCR does, the Division of Corrections and Rehabilitation, they've set up the GOALS program, and that's offered in prison and jail, and you can be sentenced to the GOALS program, and that means you know, you can get rehabilitation and rehabilitative services while you're incarcerated. I've visited the GOALS program. I'll be the first to admit I need to learn more about it because I think it's incredible what I already know. But, you know, this exists in several different facilities that we have in West Virginia. The pods that they have in jail are separate from any other population. So if you're a sober living inmate, mm-hmm. you don't have to live with somebody that's not sober. You live with sober living inmates that are all on the same path and want to be, you know, on the same path. So they're working towards a common goal. It's amazing. So the GOALS program is another thing, but.
Well, it just seems, you know, just watching the news, listening, you know, to the news, that it's almost hopeless. Like I've been around since the drug crisis of the 60s, and it seems like it's never gotten better, only gotten worse.
Right.
Well, I think this is a good time to take a quick break, and we'll continue this important discussion that we're having.
And we'll talk a little bit more about some of the homelessness issue around town and some of the things and the crime rate in general. Mm-hmm. Things we maybe should be talking about more often.
Okay. All right. Well, to come back, listen, take the break, get some ice cream. If you don't have time to rush out to the Crest of the Coal and get your ice cream, that's okay. Get whatever ice cream you got.
Look, it's the 21st century. Grab your phone, take it to the car, set Bluetooth, listen while you drive to get the ice cream.
Hands-free, of course.
Well, yeah. That's why we use Bluetooth.
There you go.
Bluetooth in your car, unless you have an antique car like I do.
Do DoorDash. You can DoorDash it.
You can DoorDash ice cream, right?
Yeah.
I assume you can.
If you can't, you should.
We got a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a problem. I know you can in Morgantown.
Yeah.
Hands up, everybody stand up. Keep out to fight, fight, fight. Going for the goal, we take it home.
We're back to Scoop Squad, Truth Squad. This is episode 6. And I want to put in a little commercial announcement that if you are enjoying this program, chances are there's probably close to, you know, 400 or 500, 600 other people enjoying this program. And people who are connected want to know what's going on. If you would like to get your advertising message to those people, give me a call, Ron Hughes. I'm the executive director. I can put together an advertising program that will help you reach this audience on a regular basis. And that translates into feet walking into your door or clicks coming into your website. You can call me at 304-395-1111. Please don't call me to complain about things we've talked about on the show because it's really out of my control.
Please don't call me Shirley.
And don't call me Shirley. Again, that number is 304-395-1111. And that joke is probably older than you are.
I know, it's not. But, you know, Leslie Nielsen used to live in Ripley.
Yep. Yeah, he used to come here and play golf all the time.
Exactly.
The movie called Airplane. Yep. And, you know, there's like this major disaster in an airplane. All the pilots got sick. Everybody has food poisoning. And the doctor's describing how terrible that something is going on. And, another character says, "Shirley, you must be joking." And the doctor says, "I'm not joking, and don't call me Shirley."
That was on The Office. Michael Scott.
Well,
anybody watch The Office?
I love The Office.
But they stole that from a 1980 movie.
Well, I didn't know that until now, but I do love Michael Scott.
Yeah. I love Michael Scott. And you know, the thing is about The Office is that you can watch it over and over again, and it's a new joke that you haven't heard.
I can quote it probably. I've probably watched each episode. This is embarrassing. I shouldn't say it, but probably watched each episode like 80 times. It's probably been
really. Do you watch any other TV?
I mean, that's the only. I've been watching Schitt's Creek.
Mm-hmm. You can say that because we're not over the air,
right? That's what I figured. I hesitated for a second.
Yeah, you could say.
But
that.
It's great. I watched that. Working it's Moms is another good one.
Yeah, those are funny shows. I'd like to see the Office from Britain, the original English
version. Oh, it's good
too.
I
haven't seen that, so it must be
good. It's good, but it's
not.
But,
you know, I try to have a social life too, so I don't watch too much TV.
What's that?
I don't have a social life.
You go out on dates, you know, go to movies.
Oh, you do that?
Well, I do, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That must be cool.
It's nice. I mean, once you get married, you can have somebody that has to go out with you. Yeah, I'll try it at least once.
Yeah, I don't know about all that.
Your generation. So Morgan is 30, and I'm older, and so is Ron. So it's nice to have a newer generation in there. But let's get back to the topic. I know this riveting discussion of funny television, which is a light refresher to what the topic is we've got Morgan Switzer here. She's with the Department of Homeland Security. She's general counsel and their communications director. Yeah. She wears two hats.
Deputy general counsel.
Okay. Deputy.
Can't take too much credit.
Okay. Deputy general counsel.
And then you have to be a lawyer to do that.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I tricked them somehow.
It's not like a deputy like Barney Fife. You have to actually go to law school.
Yeah.
And pass.
You do have to pass.
And she used to work for the prosecutor's office in Kanawha County, not Kanawha County Schools like I was saying just a second ago. They don't have their own. They don't have their own prosecutor.
I would gladly love
At least not yet.
Maybe they need one. just joking. But we were talking about fentanyl. Mm-hmm. I would like to add to the conversation. I did talk to someone that worked at the lab. I was telling you this in the green room at this state troopers.
State police crime lab.
Yeah. And she told me a few years ago that they had gotten seized a bunch of marijuana, and it had so much fentanyl sprayed on it that they couldn't even classify it as marijuana. It had to be classified as a controlled substance.
Right.
So, you know, the danger of all this, and just in my opinion, why more laws like the one that you
Absolutely.
Were able to help craft and just got passed is that we have to recognize that, you know, people innocently can overdose on drugs without even knowing that it's been laced with fentanyl.
Or get addicted. And people, and this doesn't even address just West Virginians, right? Like, this is nationwide that I want people to understand. Fentanyl is something that drug dealers use to make their other drugs more potent so that you keep coming back.
Right.
So I can put a little bit of fentanyl into my heroin as a drug dealer. And my heroin's now more strong, right? Or stronger.
And more addictive.
And more addictive and more potent. So that person's now taking, you know, heroin that's laced with fentanyl, could be using more heroin than they, or think they can use more heroin because they don't know that fentanyl's in it, and then they overdose. But also, another important thing, Xanax. Fentanyl can be pressed into Xanax tabs. It can look legitimately like a Xanax.
So it's Xanax you would buy on the street, not at your drugstore.
No, of course not a prescription Xanax. But if somebody, if you're buying a Xanax as a user, it could absolutely look like a valid or a legitimate Xanax, but it could be pressed with fentanyl.
You could buy a bag of weed.
Absolutely. Buy a bag of weed.
And say to yourself, marijuana, there's nothing wrong with smoking a little bit of weed here and there. And then I'm not addicted. But what you don't know is that
it has fentanyl in it.
It's even a trace amount.
Absolutely. And it can kill you. And that's what's so dangerous. And that's, you know, the young people that are buying marijuana, because, of course, marijuana is not looked at as a potentially lethal or it's not looked
become
at
very mainstream.
Absolutely. It's become acceptable in a lot of forums. And that's,
I know a lot of people that use it for either pain or just for relaxation. And if you don't know where it's coming from,
Of course.
I think you're in danger.
You are absolutely in danger, and there is no guarantee that it has not been laced with something else.
Do you think legalization of marijuana is the way to maybe avoid the fentanyl crisis when it comes to pot?
Ugh, that's a loaded question for somebody like me.
Yeah, I'd hate to put you in a corner.
Yeah, I mean, no.
But is that an answer?
Well, I'll say this. Without answer, I'll give you a non-answer answer. I'll give you a non-answer. That's not even okay. Probably an answer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, sure.
But I think looking at it from a law enforcement perspective, either from a prosecutor standpoint or however you want to classify it, marijuana is just not the same as any other drug. It's just not.
Right.
However, marijuana is still not legal. So where you find marijuana in a lot of places, you're going to find other substances too. Because the same person that's dealing marijuana is also probably dealing something else.
Heroin or pills.
Something else. Or, I mean, and a lot of times, you know, you want to keep in mind that illegal drugs often come with guns, you know,
right.
Violent activity, things like that. It, not always, but sometimes. So it's not legal. It's still very dangerous to buy that stuff on the street here.
I think so. I think you're absolutely correct, especially if you don't know who you're buying
absolutely.
From.
And more and more
and where
data.
Where is that person getting it?
Right, right.
And more and more data is showing, mm-hmm. because now there are places in the United States that marijuana, even recreational marijuana, is legal, that more and more data is coming out that will reinforce that for the right person, the way that marijuana will react with your chemical makeup is not always just
harmless,
right? Mm-hmm. Thank you. You know that it can, if you're being prescribed marijuana for anxiety, for example, marijuana can induce anxiety. So the data is showing that it's not the cure-all that some would
people
like.
People think that it is.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that if you legalize marijuana, let me say this, you take that away, it's going to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, just because you take one thing out of the equation doesn't mean that, you know, the drug epidemic's going to go away.
Right.
It's all something new is always coming up. So, I mean, even fentanyl, I think that we'll see, if I could predict it, we'll see fentanyl rise and fall. Something else will come up. Hopefully not more lethal than fentanyl, but there's a good chance. So we're always going to be fighting battles that we're going to have to stay in front of when it comes to drugs. And another thing there, and this is kind of pivoting, but staying on the same topic, if you have somebody that is fighting addiction, especially to a substance like heroin or methamphetamine, you know, it is almost impossible to overcome that. But, you know, I've said this to my mother, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it forever. There is no stronger person than somebody that overcomes an addiction.
Absolutely.
It takes
a special person.
It takes a special person. And I think that, you know, I only can speak from a couple different perspectives, one being a prosecutor, but I think that during my time as a prosecutor, I was able to realize that you always have to be dynamic in the way that you prosecute crime. Every case is different. And there were a few cases that, and I'm not, if anybody knows me, I'm really not that emotional. I think that some people would probably classify me as sort of cold sometimes. But there are a couple cases that I had that brought me to, you know, tears on the record. And those were people that had fought and overcame addiction only to fall to it and die. And those are the worst cases. So, I mean, you know, the drug crisis in West Virginia is strong. It's here. It's something that needs to be taken seriously. And I think it's a team effort. It's not just the police. It's not just the government. It's not just the legislature. It's everyone.
Absolutely.
It's everyone.
Absolutely. And there's no such thing as a former addict.
Absolutely not.
It's a constant battle every day, whether you are addicted to drugs, alcohol, cigarettes even.
Absolutely.
You know,
but it's a different day. I think it's with fentanyl, mm-hmm. and it just makes it a whole – the addictive properties of some of these drugs that are on the street now are more, have a more stronger hold
absolutely.
On people than they did in years past.
Oh,
and
no.
It just makes it so, you were just talking about Xanax. Mm-hmm. It's such a, you know, that drug in college campuses or even in our high schools, it's runs rampant.
Absolutely.
And the, you know, kids don't understand how, you know, Xanax is one of those drugs that this, the detox will kill you.
It will absolutely kill you.
And so, you know, you, a kid could get addicted real quick to Xanax.
Oh,
and it's usually not coming from their mom's
medicine cabinet.
Well, a lot of times it starts there and then they're starting to buy it on mm-hmm. the street and they don't know what they're getting.
A lot of times it does. And
yeah.
I mean, because that's another thing. Xanax and what's the other one? The equivalent to Xanax. What am I trying to say?
Zoloft?
No. Xanax and the drugs like that, right? They are not something that you would typically say, oh, if I take a bunch of this or if I take a couple of these, I'm going to overdose and die. You don't have the fear of overdose with Xanax like you do with fentanyl or heroin or,
right.
or other substances.
As long as it's a prescription.
As long as it's something that you can validate that. A lot of times that's what I've seen, right? Like you take one here and there, it's your mom's or it's your aunt's or you get it from here and there. And then before you know it, you've become severely addicted to a substance that, you know, over time makes you super angry. You get agitated. That's becomes...
You black out.
You black out. You drink on Xanax. Drinking on Xanax is one of the most dangerous things you can do. I've seen so many things go wrong with that. You know, then it's just a gateway. You hear that phrase a lot, but you heard it in DARE class. I don't know. DARE class. I heard it in DARE class.
Right.
But it's true.
It's true.
It's true.
And I know I've known people, adults, whose doctors have prescribed Xanax to them mm-hmm. and didn't realize how addictive it was and drank on top of that.
Oh, it's horrible.
I had a close friend that was prescribed Xanax, and she was drinking on it, and I like laid it out to her, like, look, man, you literally are going to kill yourself one day. I'm going to find you
yeah.
dead. And she was like, well, my doctor prescribed it to me.
It's harmless. Yeah.
The doctor didn't tell you to drink, Jack Daniels on top.
Yeah. But, you know, that's that addict thinking.
Right.
Without
mm-hmm.
even knowing that you're an addict. It's mm-hmm. that addict rationalization,
right.
That can lead yep. to delusion
and
of where you are. And,
I've seen medical professionals, you know, in my family that, you know, had that situation. You know, they'd convinced themselves that they were impervious to the effects of like Xanax and
right.
alcohol and pain medication on top of that, muscle relaxants.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know it, you know, they're in, you know, drinking wine at a restaurant and they don't know where they are. They're
right.
a zombie.
Right. It's so easy to do.
Yeah. And I was working with a woman a few years back and in a organization I was working with, and she was talking about how fussy she'd been and that she had run out of her pain meds, but the guy down the street gave her some
right.
and she was feeling less fussy
mm-hmm.
and I went, oh, she's an yeah. addict. She didn't even realize.
And you don't know.
Yeah, she didn't even know.
Until somebody tells you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
Oh my God, I'm an addict. What?
Gotta have it.
Well, you do. Right. And
no,
you know,
I'm not.
No, I'm not. Or,
I'm not living under a bridge.
Right, right. And that's the classification that you don't want to be in. But, you know, so many people get sucked into that lifestyle without even knowing it.
Right, right. And I think, I've done a lot of volunteer work in the recovery community
mm-hmm.
and, you know, I specifically work mainly with women because I'm a woman, but, you know, a lot of those stories are about just always equated to high tide. Like
mm-hmm.
you're laying on a beach and you're reading a good book and it's like the sun starts setting a little bit and all of a sudden the ocean's around you and you didn't even realize
Absolutely.
It. And I think that's what addiction is for a lot of people.
Right.
No one ever starts out doing drugs, saying I'm going to be your good old-fashioned
Mm-mm.
drug addict, or taking drugs that's prescribed.
Absolutely.
I mean, I know so many women that were prescribed pain meds, and then the next thing you know, the doctor's taking it away from them, and they're addicted.
Well, and then think about it. You get prescribed that, and for so long, you do not have to have coping skills. You do not have to cope with regular, everyday stressors. right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, it's gone. Well, and you don't have coping skills.
Right. Pain med is pain med, right?
Absolutely.
You're dumbing it. You're numbing the physical pain, and then you're also numbing the emotional pain.
Even if you don't know that you're doing it, and then all of a sudden it's gone, the buffer's gone, or the numbness is gone, and you go, I don't know how to deal with this stress, and I need something. Whether
the problems
it be alcohol
are still there.
Or the immediate gratification, sleep. I need this to go away
right now. Because, help.
Yeah.
Panic.
Yeah.
It's there and it's real.
It is.
And I think that, you know, with, you know, another unique thing that I was able to come to terms with, and I've been so lucky in my 30 years, I really have, with my careers. I was raised by two amazing parents, had so many people that loved me around me, and I never had to suffer. I really didn't. But in my job as a prosecuting attorney, I was able to see and sympathize with people that, you know, were going through addiction or abuse. And that's kind of what I'm getting at, right? Your friend didn't know that she was an addict. Sometimes you have to say, hey, wake up. This is what's going on. And there were so many times where, you know, I've had to pull, you know, people that are struggling with addiction or domestic abused women, domestically abused women, victims of domestic violence into a room and say, listen to me, you are going to die. It's not an if, it's a when. This mm-hmm. is going to kill you, whether it be this man that you're with or this woman that you're with or this drug that you're addicted to.
Or the people delivering you the drugs.
You're going to die, right. And I begged and pleaded and begged and pleaded. And then I realized that, you know, I can't beg them to do something because they are right now so defeated, and I have to be the one that helps and attacks what's hurting them, right? And protects them, acts as their protector.
I think that's a great way to put it because I think that's let's take a quick break. But when we get back, I really do want to talk to you about the role of law enforcement in the drug epidemic. And in my opinion, I think it's a crucial piece of the puzzle that helps people who may not want to or realize that they're in the throes of addiction. It gets them in a space where they can kind of have a moment of clarity.
Absolutely.
So we'll be right back.
If you would like to make sure your voice is heard, contact Scoop Squad Truth Squad at gmail.com or find them on Facebook. If your business would like to reach out to our rapidly growing audience, contact Ron Hughes at 304-395-1111 or email ron.hughes@wvradio.com.
Scoop Squad Truth Squad with Jenny Reiser and Morgan Switzer.
And producer Ron.
Morgan is guest hosting, I guess, for her mother, Ashley. And she comes to us from a crime-fighting background.
You need a superhero costume.
She may look like Supergirl on TV.
Okay.
What is her name? Melissa Benoist, I believe.
I've been called a lot worse.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it happens. You know.
Great. Hey, if you're going to insult me, be really creative.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've heard it all at some point. You know.
I've been called a lot of things. Evan, bitch. That's always one of my favorite. I'm like, well, yes, I am.
Thank you.
Thanks. Well, what I tell people is if you're going to insult me, like find something that you think I'm like real self-conscious about, like go for it, you know?
Right. Yeah. Hit me where.
Get me, man.
Don't like, use these generalities.
Yeah.
Come on.
Like I'll respect a little bit more. I'll just respect it, you know?
Yeah.
Don't just be like generic, like, you know, B word. Okay, whatever. Like call me like a chicken neck or something. Like make fun of my head, you know, like my pee head. Something.
Well, don't give them ideas if they haven't already seen it.
Well, that now I've taken away the sting. Now they know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
There you go.
So before the break, I did want to get into just a little bit about what you feel like the role of law enforcement is. Mm-hmm. There is some debate throughout the country about decriminalizing drugs, decriminalizing everything. And I am a person that believes that law enforcement does have a role to play in this drug epidemic have seen at work, just like the program you were talking about within the jail system, to get people, give them a moment of clarity, if nothing else, a moment to think about what's the madness that's going on or in their lives. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, I think that it's important to recognize that people that are addicted to drugs and people that are suffering with addiction can be redeemed. You can be redeemed. You can overcome that. And even if your addiction has led to a criminal lifestyle, or if you've racked up records, you can overcome that. And so I think that law enforcement sees that. From my perspective, I think that prosecutors, at least in Kanawha County, we see that. Judges see that. The Department of Homeland Security surely sees that in developing the goals program and so on and so forth. You know, we've given ample thought to how we can help recovering addicts and people that are trying to get over addiction. So that's one thing, right? So one thing is that you can be redeemed. But then, you know, there are people that have just gone so far that, you know, criminal activity is still criminal activity. And so law enforcement can only do so much, and we can only do so much until you take ownership of your own life. But, you know, law enforcement is so important in response to any crime. They're your boots on the ground. I used to tell them all the time, you're the first people that are there. You're the people that are going to report back to me and tell me exactly what you saw as a prosecutor, right? You tell me what was going on, what people said, what you experienced, smells, you know, how people looked. So I think that the role of law enforcement, whether it be to give people the encouragement to change their ways, you know, not every interaction with law enforcement has to be negative. A lot of times it's positive. And I know so many officers that have had positive impacts, you know, defendants in criminal cases that have thanked law enforcement for their intervention into their lives. I've been thanked multiple times for the compassion that I've shown in cases. And I think that's hugely important to recognize that, you know, I think I said it earlier, being a dynamic prosecutor is something that I was taught and something that is important, I think, to all prosecution. Knowing that every case is different, that people are able to be redeemed in certain situations, especially people. I mean, those are the most exciting cases, I think. People that can be encouraged that, hey, just because you have an addiction does not mean that you're damaged, broken, or can't be repaired, right? You are okay. You can be okay. Those are the people that you want to fight with. And so law enforcement can get behind you, rally behind you, and be the people that really, you know, help you to recover. And so I think that law enforcement are crucial. They're the people that can get you from point A to point B if you let them.
Do they need more specialized training when dealing with social issues or social services to help people get on the, you know, get on a straight path?
Well, I'm of the opinion, even now, you know, I would love to go back to school. I don't think any education is bad education. Further mm-hmm. learning, further training in any career field, especially law enforcement, is not bad. So my answer to that would be, of course they do. And that's not because I think I see a defect or a deficiency, but I think any education is good education.
Right. Well, and as the real life situation evolves, you know, you need law enforcement with training that maybe they didn't need before. You know, you're just dealing with, you know, with bank robbers and bootleggers and things like that. You know, that's one skill set for law enforcement. You know, now law enforcement needs to be trained in how to deal with people with problems that maybe you don't recognize.
And the biggest thing that you need as a law enforcement officer, as a prosecutor, as a judge, anybody that deals with criminal justice, you need to have a good heart. You need to have a passion to do the work.
Right. Passion for people.
You have to have a passion for people. And you have to have the just the deep desire to make a difference, whether that be in one individual's life or whether that be in your community, your state, your nation, whatever. You have to have a deep desire to do the work.
And the law enforcement officers I know, you know, they wouldn't be there if they didn't care.
Oh, absolutely.
And they wouldn't
not.
Be involved, as involved, you know, in the neighborhoods, working with the kids, playing basketball with the kids or soccer or whatever. Just, you know, just being there as a, you know, maybe even a replacement father figure.
Oh, some of the best people I've ever met that I know to this day are law enforcement officers. And they do it not because they get paid well, because they don't. They do it because they love the work, because that's who they are. They want to protect. They want to make sure that they're doing, you know, leaving a legacy that's, you know, meant to be left. And
but I think, you know, going back to what you said, is that while the person is committing crimes, period, they have to be held accountable to the laws that they're breaking. And you can give people a million excuses as to why they are doing that. But the fact of the matter is they're still committing crimes. And
oh, yeah. You can't give them a pass. A lot of times that's what saves their life.
I know women that if it were not for their incarceration in that moment of come to Jesus, like
accountability.
Yeah. Absolutely. A moment of accountability. Like you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life.
Or you're going to be dead.
You're going to be dead. And those, you know, or you're going to be dead in jail because you're not going to stop doing what you're already doing.
Yeah.
Your children are going to suffer.
The criminal justice system interferes in so many positive ways. Addiction is addiction is addiction. You can be addicted to anything. You can be addicted to drugs. You can be addicted to relationships. And the way that I was able to prosecute my cases was to recognize that, right? You have to interfere and intervene meaningfully as a law enforcement officer and say, listen, I know this person can't protect themselves, so I'm going to step in and protect you. You're not going to like it, what I'm doing, right? When I lock your old man up or your old woman up for what they're doing to you, but I'm saving your life.
Yeah, it's a disruptor.
It's a disruptor. You're addicted to this person, yep. And he's going to kill you. You're addicted to this drug. It's going to kill you. We need to start problem solving. And, you know, that
when you're in the middle of it, sometimes you just need that just immediate, like
being removed from your comfort zone.
Absolutely.
You know, and your comfort zone is something that's going to kill you. And you've got to be able to recognize, hey, this is where I've got to stop.
Right. And I think that's what's so powerful about being in law enforcement, what's so powerful about being in government. You know, what I'm so thankful for in my career is to be able to be in a place where I am standing up for people that can't stand up for themselves.
Absolutely.
And it's an honor. It's a privilege.
We're about out of time for episode 6 of Scoop Squad Truth Squad.
They've wasted another 45 minutes.
Can I come back?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Getting more ice cream.
Anytime.
You know? I think I babbled for a second. You asked me a question that was good. And then I was like,
that was 45 minutes ago.
Oh, I don't remember.
Thanks, man.
It was great. Yeah. It's just going to be embedded forever with, on our podcast. But that's
with
okay.
Jenny Reiser. Sweet. And Morgan Switzer.
Well, we want you back.
Yeah,
anytime.
Definitely come back as the third wheel or the third.
I've been a third wheel my whole life. I would love to be a third wheel.
You're here.
Okay.
The knockoff,
we'll see you hopefully next week or the week after.
Okay.
Ask your mom if you can come back.
I'll ask my mom.
You got to get permission from Ashley.
Hey, mom,
I'm bigger than her. You know
go
that.
On a, yeah, you are
I'm
taller.
About 6 feet taller than her.
She's as much fun as her mom is. She, I called her this on Sunday. She didn't even get listen to my message because she's
so sorry.
30, and 30-year-olds don't do that.
It's because you didn't text.
You have to text me.
I know. I'm learning. You know what? I'm a caller. I'm sorry. But anyway, I was like, your mom's not here. And you've got to. She told me that you were going to take care of me this week.
Yeah. After your mom posted on Facebook last week and probably didn't tell you that you were going to be hosting.
She said something about it. And I was like, I'm there, but you got to have a bleep button.
Yeah. You did great.
I know. I didn't even say
we one. Haven't needed it.
It's so exciting.
So hot damn. I'm sorry.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
See you next week, folks.
All right. Thank you.
Rebroadcast, retransmission, or transcription is not permissible without the expressed approval of Scoop Squad Truth Squad. Copyright 2022 Scoop Squad Truth Squad.